Before hearing the scheduled talk by Senator Gerald P. Nye, it is our pleasure to present from New York Mr. John T. Flynn, Chairman of the National Committee for Neutrality Legislation. Mr. Flynn.
Ladies and gentlemen, historians of the last war argue whether Russia or Germany mobilized first. But the war did not begin with the mobilization. Wars have a way of beginning years before the killing starts. They begin not with the bloody harvest, but when the first seeds of war go into the ground. It is the business of the statesman to perceive the fatal moment when these tragic war seeds are planted. 18 months ago, a group of senators forced an investigation of the whole baleful but profitable big business of making war. Their revelations have shocked the world. Out of this has come a program to save this nation from war. The leader in this great movement is Senator Gerald P. Nye of North Dakota. The National Committee for Neutrality Legislation is formed to mobilize the conscience of the nation behind his splendid efforts. He has just returned from the Far East, where he had the opportunity of observing more war seeds being planted. Tonight we are privileged to hear him on the grave and pressing issue of neutrality. I have the honor to introduce to you a great, loyal, and useful servant of the people, Senator Gerald P. Nye, Chairman of the United States Senate Special Committee to Investigate the Munitions Industry, who will speak to you from Washington.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, as Congress prepares to meet on January 3rd, the hopes and expectations of the American people are plainly concentrated on it as they have rarely been before. The people turn from the picture of war in Africa, which may at any moment engulf all of Europe, to their own representatives in their Congress, and ask for protection from involvement in that war. The American people are determined that no one, through accident and carelessness, or through design and intent, shall do anything whatsoever to make this country part of a possible worldwide explosion. Last spring and summer, Senator Clark and I proposed what was generally considered to be an encompassing program of neutrality. This was embodied in Senate Resolutions 99, 100, and 120, which were in degree basic to the compromise neutrality law adopted during the closing days of Congress in August. The compromise was then accepted only to tide through what was then the growing emergency in the world and to hold fast until Congress came back to its tasks in January. The coming legislation of which I speak involves principles laid down in the resolutions heretofore mentioned and by other resolutions proposed in both Senate and House. These principles will be incorporated in one bill, and that neutrality bill will, I predict, be passed by Congress with a minimum of opposition. This program will quarantine arms and ammunition. It provides that we shall not go into the business of supplying the tools of death to nations at war at a great profit or at any profit whatsoever. No longer will a million mothers throughout the world hate us because their sons were killed and wounded by cartridges made in America, fired out of machine guns made in America. Under the bill, any great war boom, which has as its only firm foundation the shaky and undesirable hope that the war will go on and on forever, will not be allowed to grow up at all. Under the neutrality bill, we will export to nations at war only normal quantities of goods to those nations which can pay for them and succeed in accomplishing delivery. We propose also in this bill to quarantine another war danger, propose to forbid globetrotters who needlessly travel upon belligerent ships and take chances of being bombed from the air by foreign planes or being sunk from the sea by torpedoes, from allowing their carelessness and their indifference to involve the fate of 120 million other Americans. We would also quarantine loans and credits to belligerents. What they want outside the immediate fields of implements of war and can come and purchase at their own risk in this country, they must pay for in cash. If there are certain key war materials which are being supplied to the belligerents, the supply of which is prolonging a foreign war, the President shall enumerate such materials and embargo them against both sides under the proposal which will be presented. The general bulk of foreign trade, which is neither arms nor key war materials, shall be sent at the risk of the purchaser. The belligerent countries, rather than the United States, must assume the responsibility for ships with cargoes intended for the use of the belligerent countries and which are subject to sinking by aeroplane or by bomb or submarine torpedo without a moment's notice. I have said that I think this program will be adopted by Congress with a minimum of opposition. In the months following last May, when these neutrality proposals were originally introduced, there was in some parts a belief that the chief executive of the nation should be given the power to choose sides. In view of what has happened in Europe within the last 2 weeks, I think we will hear no more of that. The proposition that we should automatically join in imposing penalties on one side when we had in no way had any part in deciding which nation should be penalized was always bad enough. Now, during the last 2 weeks, it has become very clear that the ideals of those who believed in world cooperation can be and have been betrayed at their own hearthstones. If we as a nation had joined in one-sided penalties when the neutrality resolution was passed in August, we would today be a part to that betrayal. That chapter is ended, I hope. The only real danger to this proposed large neutrality program is the self-interest of certain groups who may want to be paid for their particular share in keeping the United States out of war. No man who has watched the European development with any understanding has escaped the evidence that the great British and Dutch oil interests have spoken against the oil sanctions. The financial interests of Britain and of France have played their part in the recent tragedy in Europe. American companies have made a series of economic alliances with private companies abroad. It is not the American State Department which will in any way oppose this neutrality resolution. It is the American companies with interests abroad which will protest against having those interests jeopardized for the mere sake of saving American people from war. It is expected that they will want to be bought off and will demand that any losses they might suffer during a war between others will be paid for by the American taxpayer. I regret that we should have come to a time when we have to consider paying people subsidies to keep the rest of us from being forced into uniform and sent overseas to live and to die in mud. I regret that those groups who have so often and so valiantly spoken for peace in this country should have been influenced by this view. I understand some of them have recommended that the business interests, which in any case would suffer from a war, should be bought off. The end sought in the neutrality proposals, which Senator Clark and I will introduce at once Congress convenes, is so direct and the purpose so clear that there should be no uncertainty about it in the minds of those who want a real neutrality policy established for their country. But it will be fought on the pretext one and another. It will be charged that the bill will work a keen hardship upon Americans who are dependent upon an export trade, that we will lose business. It seems to me the answer to that is clear, that all the commerce in the world isn't worth it if its continuation is dependent upon so costly a siege as was and is ours as a result of our last experience in a foreign war. It will be continually charged due that this neutrality policy, made mandatory, might prove very embarrassing if its enforcement is not left permissive with the President. The stock story intended to frighten us in this connection is to the effect that if some foreign power did the distantly impossible thing of attacking Canada or some South American country, our neutrality policy would prevent any help in the way of arms, food, loans, or credits going to these neighbors and friends. At once, it is pointed out, the provision should be left discretionary with the President to avoid this embarrassment. Let me ask, who is foolish enough to worry for fear Congress would not lift the embargo provisions in the event some such attack as this were actually undertaken? we need to but remember that in our neutrality efforts of 20 years ago, the policy was not a mandatory one. Its failure ought to be forever in our minds. I'm about to address myself to the clause in the neutrality plan, which has recently been laid down by forces operating as a peace council or a peace conference under the leadership of none other than a very eminent American professor who has occupied a prominent place in American thought on neutrality and on the issue of war and peace. I fear there may be much confusion concerning the merits of neutrality proposals. I wish there could be less of development than there is, development which tends to divide folks bent upon obtaining a common goal. I wish to express my emphatic dissent to certain viewpoints that are being expressed. When there is a foreign war, all business inevitably suffers, if not during the war, in the financial collapse which follows it. The risk which businessmen with foreign interests take when a war breaks out abroad are less by far than the risks which the American boys will inevitably be called upon to take unless this neutrality resolution is passed and the forces which more or less unconsciously pull us into wars are stopped dead in their tracks. You may have read during the last 2 days of the neutrality plan which was worked out by the Neutrality Committee under Professor Shotwell of the Carnegie Foundation. As for the Carnegie Foundation, I do not recall that it even tried to keep us out of the last war. But with all proper respect for the association subscribing to this new proposal, I wish to call attention that in essence, it makes us the tail of the League of Nations dog, which can be a very unclean animal at times, as was evidenced by recent peace proposals which died a miserable death when betrayal was sensed. While there is much that is good and helpful in the plan proposed, it nevertheless provides that in case the nations constituting the League declare war, our country will be drawn into supporting those nations quite regardless of whether they are fighting for righteousness or are simply fighting to maintain some small corner of the European balance of power. It is left within the President's complete and unhampered discretion to have this country help the League of Nations countries when at war. It is left wholly within the power to impose American sanctions without any further vote or approval by the representatives of the people. The clause in this neutrality plan to which I am now addressing myself reads, quote, "The President may, from time to time, by proclamation extend such embargo to other states, if and when he finds that they have become engaged as belligerents in such war. If we truly want neutrality, let me say, the word used should be shall, not may." After all, considering all of these points, if it is really neutrality we want in America, let us write a determined policy, one that we can fall back upon when the world or parts of it may break loose from moorings of sanity. A policy that permits no playing of favorites. Never knowing who the administrative head of our government will be, say nothing of what his interests and instincts may be, can we be said strictly to want neutrality when we are only content to feel that we have left our neutrality policy to the discretion of one single man, the President? I'm sure not. I thank you.
You have been listening to the Honorable Gerald P. Nye, United States Senator from North Dakota, who spoke to you on the subject of neutrality.